I've always been amazed how something that seems so simple can take on a life of its own. It's happened to me just a few years ago because I told a little joke and I shared a story about my mother. Now, she told me not to tell stories about her today, but I will anyway. This little incident happened on Saturday, March the 5th, 2016, when I was pastoring Donway Baptist Church in Toronto. We were hosting in our building a town hall meeting sponsored by our MP, Ms. Yasmin Ratanzi, to celebrate International Women's Day. I don't know why they asked me, a man, to speak at that, but they did. I was asked to welcome everyone to the church and to share a reflection to the group about a woman who made a difference in my life. I began my remarks with a story of the minister, some of you may have heard this, who got up in front of his congregation one morning and said this to them: "I want to tell you that some of the best moments of my life have been spent in the arms of another man's wife." As you can imagine, there was an audible gasp from the congregation, and the minister paused for dramatic effect and then proceeded to say, "I also want you to know I call her Mom." See? I then went on to make the point that much of what we think of in terms of gender issues is a reflection of the influence of our mothers. Fathers as well, but I was reflecting on women's issues that particular day. I thought that was the end of that little experience until a few weeks later, there appeared at the church a heavy envelope. You know those padded envelopes? With a padded portfolio inside, embossed with the Parliament of Canada logo, which contained a printed parliamentary notice. A report, actually. It seems that Ms. Ratanzi rose in the House of Commons on March the 10th of that same year, and said in part, I was talking about that town hall meeting. She said this on the floor of Parliament: "Yes, I am telling you the truth. I would like to thank Reverend Daryl McGuire for reminding us that it is women, our mothers, who nurture society. His example of his mother and the influence she had on his life was uplifting. It is important to recognize the achievement of women and know there is still much to be done to promote gender equality in Canada and across the world." How many of you have had your mother mentioned in Parliament? What I said that about my own mother and society in general still holds true, and is especially important that this is Mother's Day. Perhaps it was the recognition of how important mothers are in our lives that motivated Anna Jarvis. How many of you heard of her? Oh, I'm going to be teaching you a little bit of history. In 1905, Anna's mother passed away, and the grief of that loss was unbearable for her. On the anniversary of her mother's death, on the second Sunday in May, Anna invited some friends over to her home and announced that she had an idea for a nationwide celebration called Mother's Day. Now, Anna's first step in this plan was to write to the Methodist Church in Grafton, Virginia, where her mother had attended for many years. She suggested that the church hold a special service in which mothers receive special recognition. And so on May 10th, 1908, the very first Mother's Day service was held in Grafton, Virginia. The minister spoke on John 19:26 to 27. "Then Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby and said to his mother, 'Dear woman, here is your son,' and to the disciple, 'Here is your mother.' And from that time on, this disciple took her into her home." Miss Jarvis also presented each mother present with a carnation, her mother's favorite flower. Miss Jarvis had a vision of making that a national celebration, so she took to doing a writing campaign. She wrote to Congress, she wrote to mayors, and she wrote to all kinds of clergy throughout the country. And then finally, Woodrow Wilson, the president at the time, in 1914, declared the second Sunday of May as Mother's Day. We Canadians just adopted the celebration from them, so that's okay. The story goes on, however. Anna Jarvis became very unhappy with the commercialization of Mother's Day. She actually launched several lawsuits against companies that sought the profit from that day. All these lawsuits failed. She went bankrupt. She ended up on public assistance. And in 1948, Anna Jarvis died. She was poor, childless, and very unhappy. When I think about Anna Jarvis, I feel very sad. She clearly adored her mother and as a legacy sought to have all mothers honored as she tried to honor her own mother. The greeting card businesses, the florists, the restaurants, even though they were sued back then, owe Anna Jarvis a great debt. Without her tireless efforts to bring about Mother's Day, I'm sure their bottom lines would be a lot leaner. I know Anna Jarvis sacrificed a lot to bring about this particular holiday celebration. But I suspect that few among us would suggest that because of Anna's sacrifice, we should do away with Mother's Day. Those of us who still have our mothers with us recognize just how blessed we are. Those of us whose mothers have gone to be with God would love nothing better than to give their moms just one more carnation and take them to their favorite restaurant. Being a mother is not for the faint of heart. I'm talking to the choir now. Norman Bailes, in talking about family ministries, writes this. The mom ministry is one of the toughest assignments God can give anyone. She's got to be as insightful as a psychologist, tough as a Marine Corps drill instructor, and gentle as a nurse. She's got to be a labor and management negotiator, a teacher, an electrician, a plumber, and a carpenter. It requires an endless supply of energy, massive amounts of patience, an iron will, and a recognition of the fact that if she gets sick, she has to get well before the end of the school day. However, I don't know if you've noticed this, but there's an unsettling trend going on in our society right now that seems to belittle the role of motherhood and parenting in general. What frightens me even more is the belittling parenting. We're now seeing a whole host of social problems developing in our culture, in our society. I don't know how many of you remember this, but back on April the 25th, 2016, at 1 a.m. in the morning, there was a story in the Toronto Star about a toddler in Toronto who was discovered outside her neighbor's home crying for its mother, 1 a.m. in the morning. It seems that the father was at work on the night shift, and the mother decided to leave her three-year-old for an hour and a half because she wanted a pizza. All of us have heard horror stories of parents abandoning children in parked cars. Some have perished, unfortunately. While they've gone in perhaps to the casino to gamble for hours, leaving their small child unattended. I do not think for a moment this denigration of parenting is all about the old debate about career versus family. I think that's rubbish. Frankly, many people now grow up with both parents working, mostly out of a necessity. Have you seen how expensive it is to buy and maintain a home today? And this was the case in my family growing up. My mom and dad both worked. I think the problem is a growing narcissism in our society in which even the needs of our own children are sacrificed for our own personal gratification, whether it's getting a pizza in the middle of the night or something else. What bothers me is the idea that our time and our effort as parents is somehow becoming of secondary value to lesser things. It's high time, I think, that we restore to society's mind and heart the high value of godly parenting. The stakes are extremely high. This is what I was trying to communicate with my words at that town hall meeting in Toronto. The person I became, and we all become, is greatly influenced by our time in the arms of another man's wife, our mothers. The good mothers are always prepared to set aside their own wants for the betterment of their children. It is critical to the health of our society that we have great mothers and fathers, men and women who will guide into maturity our future leaders. If this is a goal that we all believe is important, then we need to pay attention to our scripture lesson from Titus today. In a nutshell, Paul is telling Titus that good mothering, and I extend that to mean good fathering too, does not come out of a vacuum. Good parenting does not come naturally, Paul is suggesting, like breathing does. Now, some aspects of it are pretty natural to us. We find it easy, in most cases, to love our children. But ask any teacher here today about what they see in the classroom and what they know about the home life of their students, and you quickly learn that not all is right in this world. Not always, but surely many of the adults we know or hear about whose lives are really messed up got that way, at least partially, by what they experienced in the home growing up. Now here's a shocking bit of news from the letter to Titus. I'm glad you're sitting down for this. Some of this dysfunction found in families is not the parents' fault. There, I said it. Well, actually, Paul said it. Did you read verse 4? These older women must train younger women. What are they to train them to do? It says, well, you're to love, train them to love their husbands and their children, to live wisely, to be pure, to take care of their homes, to do good, and be a submissive to their husbands. I'm leaving that last one alone for now. Training moms and dads is therefore a community thing. Wow. This isn't about meddling into each other's affairs, but it is also certainly not about taking a hands-off approach. There's an old saying, we've all heard it, it takes a village to raise a child. Paul's saying, no, it takes a church to raise a family. Paul saw the church as a living organism. The people in the church are all connected, all working together for the health of the whole. We're a family. In 1 Corinthians 12, he talks about how when one of us suffers, we all suffer. When one of us rejoices, we all rejoice. In a really profound way, there's no such thing as minding your own business in the church family. How we manage our lives, our homes, our business dealings are relevant to the faith community as a whole. Now, if you want to live a life of anonymity, don't go and join a church. There is, of course, a difference from being a busybody and lovingly intervening in someone's life to make a difference. That's critical. If Paul had the word available to him, he might have used the word mentoring. That's a popular word today. Paul says that older women are to set an example of a godly life. Older women are to help younger women to become godly in their own walks of life. Implied here is that right living and right teaching, they go hand in hand. Now, one thing that someone might want to raise is the question of what constitutes an older woman. Boy, that's dangerous. I don't think it has anything to do with chronological age. I really don't. It's more about attitude. It's about life's experience. Maybe the phrase, she is an old soul, fits here. I don't know. Surely Paul means women who have experienced a bit more of life than others. Maybe he means women whose children have grown up and no longer need their mother's full attention. Older women are those who can honestly say, well, I've been there and I've done that. One surefire way to know that maybe you're an older woman is if you see a younger woman, especially a mother, taking a certain course of action, you go, tsk, 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 tsk. In my day, we'd have never done things that way. Again, notice I didn't say that you're an old woman, but rather you're older than the younger woman. In a healthy church environment, older women and men can mentor young adults. We can empathize with their struggles. We can offer guidance when it's asked for. We can carefully and lovingly intervene when we see someone heading down a treacherous path in life. And we can pray for them. It is not that we are all know-it-alls, but we do know some things, don't we? As a church, we are incarnating the body of Christ. Our collective God-given wisdom is exponentially far greater than any wisdom we possess on our own. The overall goal is that of a ministry of love. We work together to learn to love each other, to enhance the love of our homes. Yes, many of us could say something about how to love our spouses. Yes, many of us could talk about how to love our children. We're not talking about mushy feelings here, but biblical agape love. Alyssa Morgan and Carol Kai Kendall, in their book, What Every Child Needs, speaks of 9 basic needs of a child expressed in the language of love. 9. Every child needs security. That's a hold me close love. Every child needs affirmation. That's a crazy about me love. Every child needs a sense of belonging. That's a fit me into the family love. Every child needs discipline. A give me limits kind of love. Every child needs guidance. Show me and tell me love. Every child needs respect. Let me be love. Every child needs play. A play with me, love. Every child needs independence. A let me grow up, love. And every child needs hope. A give me hope, love. All children need to experience these 9 loves, they write. And the primary source of these expressions of love need to come from where? Mothers and fathers. We've got to stop assessing the success of any family by how much money they make. Or how big is the house they live in. Or how wonderful is the car they drive. But rather, let's assess them by the quality and the depth of the love within the home. The greatest achievement of any family, I strongly believe, is that we love one another. Being a mother is, as Paul Ware states, a soul craft. Huh? Moms are partners with God in crafting a child into an adult that is trained and ready to serve Him. Consider the life and the ministry of Paul's protege, Timothy. You've heard of him. Timothy had been prepared by this soul craft. Paul writes this, "I know that you sincerely trust the Lord. You have the faith of your mother, Eunice, and grandmother, Lois." Time and time again, the Bible tells us that nothing is more important than love. Love of God and love for each other. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13 that if we did amazing sacrificial things, even in a family, but we don't have love, well, we're nothing. Please don't let anyone tell you that making a priority of your family is frivolous, a waste of your time or resources. Don't let the world's ideas of what they think it makes a person successful make you think any less of your role as a parent. We should never wear our titles as mothers and fathers without some sense of pride, but rather we should use it as an acknowledgement of our calling from God. Years ago, there was a mother who had to fill out some forms at a county clerk's office. She was asked on the form what her job was. She replied on the form, "I am a mother." And the clerk at the desk said, "Well, being a mother is not really an acceptable job title." So in the place of where it said occupation, she wrote this. I am a research associate in the field of child development and human relations. I have a continuing program of research, which mother doesn't, or what mother doesn't, in the laboratory and in the field, that is indoors and out. I'm working for my master's, for the whole family, and already have 4 credits, all daughters. Of course, the job is one of the most demanding in the humanities, and I often work 14 hours a day, more like 24. But the job is more challenging than most run-of-the-mill careers, and the rewards are in satisfaction rather than money. If we really want a strong society, if we really want well-adjusted future leaders, then we need to do all we can, all of us, to mentor and support the young mothers and fathers that are in our midst. This is the church's calling. This is the church's responsibility. So can mothering be learned? Absolutely. And every time we are together as a church family, we can honestly say, school's in session.